Good morning. Today's daf in Pesachim is Tess. We are in the Mishnah, the very top of the Amud, and this is now going to be our second Mishnah here in the Masechta. We have discussed now the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. The idea is that when Pesach comes around, so there's going to be Nisr Chametz on Pesach proper, meaning on the night of the 15th, so there's going to be an Isra Min HaTorah with a Chiv Kares. As a result of that, well, before we get to that, and then on Erev Pesach, already at Chatzos, there's also an Issa D'oraisa to eat Chametz and to own Chametz, as we already established in the beginning of this parak. Daf Hei is where we spent a considerable amount of time talking about how the Issa Chametz already begins halfway through Yudalin, at midday on the 14th of Nisan, so already there's an Issa D'oraisa, one's not allowed to eat Chametz. And we learned in the beginning of this Masechta that you have to do a Bedika in order to do Biur. In other words, we're going to search and destroy the Chametz from our house. So in order to ensure and make sure that we have none of it there. The Isser Chametz is such a serious Isser, and as Tosus points out in the beginning of the Masechta, not only is it such a serious Isser, but on top of that, we're habituated to eating it, meaning for most of the year, it's Mutal Lagamre, and so therefore what we do is that we go to an extent that we don't do by any other Isser, and that is that we search and destroy it before Pesach. Okay. And so what we've been discussing now for the last week and a half in the beginning of the Masechta is the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Okay, so certainly the picture has been drawn very clearly that we're talking about a significant Isser, serious Isser over here, one in which prior to the beginning of the Isser, so we look out to search and destroy. And with that in mind, we're going to continue our mission over here in terms of things not to be worried about. Now, just in general, when you hear, here's what you shouldn't be worried about, you know what that means. What the Mishnah is basically saying is, I would have entertained the idea of maybe worrying about such an event or such an eventuality, but the Mishnah says don't worry about it. So you get the sense that Chametz is so usher that I might have been concerned about the following. About what? So let's begin our Mishnah. Let's see what we shouldn't worry about. Ein choshesh in shema gira chulda mi baisa baisa mamakum lamakum di imkein mechatzel lechatzer umi ir leir ein ledever sof. The Mishnah goes on to describe, here's what you shouldn't worry about. Don't worry about maybe there was a weasel that took chametz from one house to another house, and or from one location to another, because if that's true, then you're going to have to worry that the weasel took chametz from one courtyard to another, from one city to another, and ein ledaver sof, and then this is just going to be an unending, limitless sense of worrying that's going to go on, and you don't need to worry. And that means to say, in Rashi over here is very clear in terms of what we're describing over here. You did bedika in one house. Okay, good. Now the house is checked, and now cheskas or baduk, right? You could put a sign in front of it saying we checked this house, and now the house next door isn't checked. And maybe here's what we should entertain: the idea that a weasel went from next door, where there's plenty of chametz next door, took some chametz, brought it into our house, which is now checked, and now has ruined the status of our house, meaning that we have to go back and check. So the Mishnah says, don't worry about that. Okay, so don't worry about that. Again, going back to a point that I made just moments earlier, when the Mishnah is telling you don't worry about that, that means that there is room to be concerned, but the Mishnah says, but at this point in time, it's just untenable. It will be simply untenable to be concerned, to have this kind of concern, because then we just can't function. You're gonna worry that the weasel brought it from this house to this house and from that house to this house, and ein ledaver sof, and there just simply is no end. Okay, so again, the sense, the flavor you get from the Mishnah is that don't be concerned about it, although one could have at least argued it's something to be concerned about. Now, time of the Lochazina, so immediately the Gemara launches and picks up on some of the nuances of the Mishnah. So why aren't we not concerned? Because Lochazina deshakal. Because we didn't see the weasel actually take chametz and bring it from one house to another. Okay, good. And so therefore, we don't have to manufacture that concern. But what if we're not manufacturing the concern? Let's say we actually see the weasel bringing chametz from one house to another house. A house that was not checked into a house that was checked. Now, is that going to create a problem? So from the Mishnah, it sounds like yes. The only thing the Mishnah is telling us is that I don't have to manufacture that concern. But once I actually see the weasel bringing chametz from one to another, certainly the simple reading of the Mishnah is, now you need to be concerned. And the Gemara wants to discuss this at length. So the Gemara says, here's what I would say. That in the circumstance where you actually saw a weasel bringing chametz from one home into another home, so I would say like this. Yes, it's true. You just saw chametz being brought into a home that was baduk, that was examined and checked. At the same time, however, can we make the following argument? Can we say that the weasel brought the chametz in, but the weasel is also going to eat it? Meaning, that's the nature of the weasel. Weasel moves from one location to another, but eventually the weasel is going to eat it. And can't you make that argument? And mi lo tanan. And not only that, this argument is in fact a very valid argument, as we're going to see together, the Mishnah in Olos. Mishnah teaches us 18th parak of Olos, Madur Sa'alkam Tameim, that if I have homes of a non-Jew, they are subject to Tumah. I'll explain this better in just a moment. Let's just read the Mishnah. V'kama yisheh b'madr v'yehamadr tzarech b'dika. Now, how long does a non-Jew have to live in this home in order for it to have required b'dika? Arba'am yom, it's going to be for 40 days. V'afa pishein lo isha. And even if the man is not married, still there's a concern. V'chol makom shecholda v'chaz yechol mahaloch ein tzarech b'dika. And if there is a weasel or any animal over there, so then there's no need to be concerned. Okay. The Mishnah Olos is describing the following, is concerned about the following. The non-Jew living in the home, so if, Rachmanus L'Slan, if God forbid they have a miscarriage or they have a stillborn, so what they're going to do is that they're not going to give it a proper burial. Meaning, the typical behavior of the Jewish community back then is that when you have a nathal, so you give it a proper burial. However, back then, when it comes to the non-Jews, they didn't do so. What did they do with their nephalim? They just simply dug in the house and they buried it somewhere in the house. And so now what you have, or at least a concern now is that you have human remains in the house. Now, there's a couple of issues over here, and I'll tackle them one by one. So over here we're talking about a non-Jew, and so therefore we're talking about the tumah that's emanating from the remains of a non-Jew. What is the status of that tumah? So Rashi over here points out, it's a machlokus between the Tanaim. We've gone over this numerous times. Rashi says over here, second Rashi in the Gemara, Milo Tanan. So Rashi quotes the Masech HaZolos, Medur Sa'ovdi Kocham Tameim, Imnei, Shekovrim Niflaim Bebateihim. Okay, so as we explained, they bury their miscarriages in their home. Veha'akum Mitamim B'misasam. Now the remains of a non-Jew are going to be Mitame, Af Be'oel L'Rabbanan. Now Rashi over here is touching on a Machlokas HaTanaim, and that is that we know that Tumah is transmitted in one of three ways. Maga, contact, Masa, carrying, and Ohel, being under the same roof. Now, when it comes to the remains of a Jew, so Tumah is transmitted in all three of those ways. However, what about a non-Jew? So it's subject to a debate between the Chachamim and the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The Chachamim are of the opinion that the Tumah that emanates from a remains of a non-Jew is in all three just like a Jew. Maga, Masa, and Oel. The opinion of the Rashbi is that the remains of a non-Jew are not mitame be'ohel. It will be mitame be'maga, it will be mitame be'masa, but not be'ohel. So, in our home where human remains are being buried, human remains of a non-Jew are being buried, so according to the Chachamim, says Rashi, clearly there would be Tumah if the remains are buried under the ground. Because according to the Chachamim, Tumah is transmitted in Maga, Masa, and Ohel. However, according to the Rashbi, there would not be a concern of Ohel. Rashi continues. Rashi writes, "Ula Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Nami Da'amar Kivrei Ovdei Kochavim Ein Matame B'Maga Uvemasa Modehu Delo Imet Ela Mitumas Ohel Delo Mikrei Adam." As far as the Rashbi is concerned, so the remains of a non-Jew are going to be Matame B'Maga Uvemasa. He just excluded from Ohel. Therefore, according to the Rashbi, there still is some transmission of Tumah that emanates from the remains of a non-Jew, just not all the transmission. Okay, and that means now that according to the Rashbi, there's also reason to be concerned as well. That's the way Rashi sets it up. Now, it's a little bit challenging to understand Rashi over here, because we're assuming now that they're burying the remains under the ground. If they're burying the remains under the ground, so then you're not going to end up neither touching nor carrying the remains. And why, according to the Rashbi, is there going to be concern? Rashi seems to suggest that even according to the Rashbi, there's a concern, and it's a little bit difficult to understand why that should be, if in fact it's buried underground, which Rashi says that's in fact the case. There is a school of thought, a major chiddush to present within Rashi over here, It's the Rashash. You can see the Rashash right here in our Rashi who says this. Others say this as well. And that is that when we talk about Tumas Ohel, so traditionally what we're describing is that you and the mace are sharing the same roof. So that means to say that the Tumah of the mace goes up, hits the roof, spreads out over the entire area of the roof and drops back down again. That's traditionally Tumas Ohel. But there's another way to describe Tumas Ohel, and that's by you being directly over the mace. So if you're directly over the mace, that's also being described as Tumas Ohel, or the other way around. Or you're directly underneath the mace, that's also being described as Tumas Ohel as well. There is a school of thinking, which is that what Rashi over here is suggesting, is that when you are directly over the mace, so even though the Tumah is being transmitted through the air, but nevertheless that's not Tumas Ohel, that falls under the category of Tumas Maga. It's as if you're making contact with the Tumah. Ohel is only when you're sharing the same roof. But if you're directly over the Tumah, categorically that's Maga, not Ohel. If that's true, now that's a tremendous Kiddush, but if that's true, then we totally understand Rashi over here. Rashi says that according to the Rashbi, it's a problem. Sure, because according to the Rashbi, if I'm directly over the area where the Nephil is being buried, so that means to say now that the Tumah is coming up and hitting me directly, and that falls under the category of Maga, and even according to the Rashbi, the remains of a non-Jew is subject to Maga. Okay, I presented that Chiddush within Rashi. It's certainly it's a tremendous Chiddush. Makes a lot of sense within explaining Rashi. Let's go back to our discussion. Here in the Mishnah in Ohelo, so now we explain why it is that we're concerned about the homes that are occupied by a non-Jew. The Mishnah also goes on to say that only if they rent it out for 40 days. But in the context of our discussion, now we also understand 40 days. 40 days because any fetal development from conception up until 40 days, the Gemara describes that as Maya Ba'alma, that has no significance as having the status of human remains. Human remains only starts after day 40 of gestation. So that's why you need to have him live there for 40 days. It's true, by the way, and I certainly understand that you can entertain the idea that he comes in with an already pregnant wife, that there is that possibility, but the Gemara says that the Mishnah seems to suggest that that's not something that we need to be concerned about. And what about the next part of the Mishnah where it says Afa Pishein Lo Isha, even though he doesn't have a wife? So that means to say that he's seemingly not living with somebody. But you assume, however, is that the nature of their habitat is that they do have a partner, even though they're not visibly living there. Okay. Anyway, all this stated brings us to the end of the Mishnah, which is the whole reason why we're bringing in the Mishnah over there. The Mishnah concludes by saying, if there are weasels or if there are pigs over there, so then there's no requirement of a bedika. You don't have to check the home. Meaning you don't have to basically sift through the earth of the house to see if there are any nephilim in the house. Why? Because we're going to be pretty confident to know that the weasel is going to go ahead and take the remains and go ahead and eat and consume it. Right, obviously very unpleasant, but that's the nature. That's the nature of the weasel, the nature of the pig, that they're going to go ahead and dig up the remains and eat it, and therefore you don't have to be concerned. So the Gemara over here is bothered by the following. In our Mishnah says that if you see the weasel dragging chametz from a house which is not checked into a house that's checked, so it's not what our Mishnah says it exactly. Our Mishnah says that you don't have to be worried about that. But the implication of our Mishnah is that if you were to go ahead and see it, so then you do need to be worried. The Gemara's question right now on the table is, well, why be worried? Why not just simply say, yes, the weasel dragged the chametz into the other person's house. However, the weasel also ate it. That is, in fact, what we learned together in that Mishnah Olos. So, Amar Abizera lo kasha ha-bebasar ha-belechem. Bebasar lo mishayre, belechem mishayre. So the Gemara gives a really indelicate answer, but the Gemara suggests that when it comes to the human remains, so the weasel is going to eat it in its entirety. But when it comes to bread, the weasel is going to eat pieces of it and leave some pieces over. So I'm a Rava Haimai. So Rava says, look, as far as I'm concerned, the question doesn't even get off the ground. I'm not bothered by this question at all. So Bishlam Ha'asam Emer Hava Emer Lo Hava V'im Tim Salam Hava Emer Chalte. Look, let's go to that Mishnah Noelos. In the Mishnah Noelos, so we're putting together a bunch of assumptions, Meaning, first of all, was there a miscarriage that actually occurred in that house? We don't know. But we do know, however, that if there was a miscarriage, it's going to be buried under the ground of the house. But we don't know a miscarriage occurred or didn't even occur. So that, to begin with, is already a concern. Meaning, we're starting already from a suffix. And now, we're saying that even if there was a miscarriage, but a weasel may go ahead and eat it. Okay, good. That's another presumption. That's another assumption. So over there, that Mishnah Olos is grounded on assumptions that we're making. It's a suffix and another suffix. So over there, I totally understand the Mishnah Olos. Gemara says, but over here, Rava saying, but over here, consider our case over here. Again, not what the Mishnah, not the Mishnah's case, but the implication of the Mishnah. If I actually saw a weasel bringing chametz from one home to another, so over there, we're not, the question's not starting on an assumption. The question's starting on a fact. Fact. The weasel brought in chametz into the other home. Now, what are we going to have to say? What can we say? Well, maybe the weasel ate it. Yeah, but maybe the weasel didn't eat it. But already now, the questions are going on something which we already substantiated. Once we substantiated that chametz has gone into that house, even though we checked the house, but once we saw chametz being brought into the house, now we have a problem on our hands. And that's why in that case over there, in our case over here, I should say, so that's why we're concerned. In the Mishnah Olos, we don't know what happened. Yes, the nature of the non-Jews is that they take the Nephilim and they bury it underground. That part's true, but we don't know that that happened. It's a possibility that it happened. But also, at the same time, there's a possibility that the remains are going to be consumed. So that's a suffix. It's a suffix. There's no reason to be concerned. In our case over here, we start with a fact. Fact. Chametz was brought into another home, and there, that's why the suffix is not going to remove us from a vadai. And the Gemara says, is that true? Vein suffix motzi mide vadai. And so now a big part of today's daf is to test this premise as to whether or not a suffix can remove a vadai. So what we're saying actually is a suffix cannot remove a vadai. And the Gemara now wants to know, is that in fact correct? V'hatayin, the Gemara quotes the following brisa, and that is, chaver shemeit v'inech megura malei peros. So let's say you have a chaver who dies, okay? And as we've gone through time and again, chaver is someone who's careful and meticulous about his performance of halacha. And so therefore, a chaver is a group of people who are assumed to be super careful about hafrashas trumos u'maisos, meaning it's not overly religious people, and other people just simply who are careful about halacha. So, but they're so careful that they gain this reputation, and they are called chaverim. So you have a chaver who dies, and what happened was is that he left over a basket of fruit, ve'afilu heim b'nei yoman. And it happens to be that we know that he picked the fruit today. So he picked the fruit today, he brought it into his house. Was he mafir shumos amaisos? So we're not sure. And the Braisa tells us, hare hein b'cheskas misukanim. The Braisa tells us that we can assume that he was mafir shumos amaisos. Now let's consider over here, what are the issues? Va'acha divide tvili. Hani Pera, the suffix meusarin, suffix lo meusarin, the kasi suffix amotzi mide vadai. So the Gemara says, consider over here, what do we know? We know for sure that when the fruit are brought into the house, so now there's the fruit are vadai tevel. There's a requirement to be mafresh shumas amaisos. So we start off with a vadai iser. Now, did our chaver take off shumas amaisos before he passed away? We don't know. Maybe he did, but maybe he didn't. And the Bryce's conclusion is, Harehem bechezkas mesukanim. Well, we don't know what happened, but we're going to say that he for sure took off Chumas HaMaisos, even though we don't know that's the case. So the Gemara says, here we have a perfect scenario, a perfect setup, where you start off with the Vadai. We know that the fruit brought into the house is Tevel, therefore Usser. And now it's a Suffolk. Did our Chaver take off Chumas HaMaisos? Maybe yes, maybe no. And we're saying that the suffix Motzi Midei Vadai. Okay? And that now presents a problem because we start off this entire discussion with the premise of ein suffix motzi mide vadai. Once I have a fact, a suffix cannot undermine the fact. So over here, I have a fact that it's tevel, and the suffix is undermining the fact. How could that be? So the Gemara gives a couple of explanations to that case regarding our chaver. So hasam vadai vadai hu, devadai maasrinan kedrabi chanina chuzah, Damar Rabbi Chanina Chuzah Chazak Al Chaver Sheimotzi Mitachas Yado Davar Sheinu Mesukan. So number one says the Gemara that when it comes to our Chaver, we're not guessing as to whether or not he took off Trumas or Maisos. We know he took a Trumas or Maisos. Now when we say knowledge over here, knowledge in the form of a Chazaka, meaning that we typify the behavior of a Chaver. A Chaver takes off Trumas or Maisos all the time. As early as possible, as quickly as possible. That's the behavior. That behavior amounts to a chazaka. Now, it's interesting over here because what the Gemara is essentially doing is that the Gemara is saying is that once we have a chazaka, once we have an established pattern of behavior, so that is tantamount to a vadai. That's a big statement. That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. So over here, yes, it's true. When the fruit is brought into the house, the fruit is vadai tevel. At the same time, however, once this person has gained the status of being a chaver, so now we're saying that he doesn't wait, he doesn't get distracted with other activities or other distractions. The moment that the fruit comes into his house, he's going to be mafresh trumos and maestros right away. We didn't see him do it, but we know he did it. Because that's the chazaka, that's the presumption that we have regarding a chaver. And so therefore, this is not a vadai followed by a suffek, it's a vadai followed by a vadai. And that's why in this case over here, we will say that for sure, he took off Shemot HaMaisos. And it doesn't challenge what we said earlier, meaning a suffix is not motzi midei vadai, but the Gemara is arguing, this is not a suffix, this is an actual vadai. That's approach number one. Ibai same, the Gemara is going to give a second approach. And that is suffix v'suffiku. Over here, we said that fact, when the fruit is brought into the house, so it is tevel and therefore usser. The Gemara now is going to challenge that. Now, instead of calling it fruit, let's call it grain. And you'll see why in a moment I change it to grain. So, Dilma mi'ikara imar delo tvile. Maybe it's possible that when the grain comes into the house, it's not chayiv in Trumas HaMaisos. Now, how is that so? Karebi Oshia, de'amar Rabbi Oshia, because Rabbi Oshia says the following. Marim adam al tvu aso. When a person has grain, he could do a harama, a little bit of subterfuge. And that is, umachnisa b'motz shalom. What he's going to do is he's going to bring it in while it's still in its chaff. So that his animal can eat it and it will be exempt from Meiser. Rashi over here gives us the necessary background information in order for us to understand and appreciate what the Gemara's point is over here. When you bring grain into your house, so that is going to make it Tevel, it's going to give it the status of Tevel Gamor, of definitive Tevel, where now you're going to have to take off Trumas HaMaisros. Now, this is what's called Re'ias Penei HaBayis. Now, the Re'ias Penei HaBayis works, but only when the grain is processed prior to it being brought into the house. Prior to being brought into the house, the grain goes through all the processes of the of Melech HaShabbos. It was winnowed, it was shelled, it was put into a pile, and then it was brought into the house, right? You didn't go through, you didn't necessarily grind it and sift it, but nevertheless, though, it was shelled. So that the grain itself, the actual kernel itself, was roe pene abai, saw the entrance to the home. However, as we're learning right now, if when it was brought into the house, it was still in its shell, so then min ha-Torah, it's not yet chayiv in trumas ha-maisos. It's based on a series of drashas. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara Bava Metzia. Anyway, it's not chayiv min haTorah in Trumas HaMaisros. And therefore what? So therefore you can snack on that food. You can eat achilas arai. And included in achilas arai, and the Gemara makes this point, Rashi makes this point even clearer, included in achilas arai is going to be that you can feed it to your animals. Rashi quotes over here the Mishnah Peah. Rashi is like four lines from the very bottom of the Amud. Machol behem lechay leofos upater min haMaisros. Ad shiyim areach. Aval amaych ladam nihid alo tava midaraisa miyo afilu kodem miyuruch asur laechol keva b'chulei gemara. Okay, you and I, even though it is not chayiv in Trumas HaMaisros min haTorah yet, you and I cannot have an achilas keva, an established meal from this grain. However, you can eat achilas arai, and included in achilas arai is that you can go ahead and you can feed it to your animals. So, the point that we're making is the following. Is that when the grain is brought into the home, since it is possible that it was brought into the home while still in its chaff, now we're not going to know that because it was processed after it was brought into the home, but yet it's not chayiv in Trumas HaMaisros min haTorah, and so therefore, min hasafek. I'm sorry. Therefore, we're not starting with a vadai that it's for sure tevel. It's only possibly tevel because there is that chance. There's that possibility. It was brought in bimotz shalah. It was brought in its shell, and therefore not chayiv in shumas amaisos min haTorah. Therefore, not chayiv. It's not iser tevel min haTorah, and that's why when he dies, so it's possible that he took off shumas amaisos. It's possible that he didn't. Meaning, we'll still leave that as a suffix. But the iser to begin with also starts off as a suffix because it's possible he brought in bimotz shalah. Okay, and so basically, in our second approach to the Gemara's answer, is that what we're describing it over here is not a suffik motzi midei vadai, but it's rather a suffik and a suffik. Now, this second approach of the Gemara over here really seems to run counter to the first approach. The first approach of the Gemara is that our chaver is so meticulous about halacha, is that what he's going to do is he's going to bring it in, and he's going to be mafresh u'maisos right away. So it's not a suffik motzi midei vadai, it's a vadai motzi midei vadai. That's approach number one. Approach number two is really, if you think about it, it's like almost the polar opposite. Well, you know, sometimes people are a little deceptive in the way they bring in their chumas amaisos into the home, where they bring it in still in the chaff, and so legally it's not chayv and chumas amaisos yet. That's a funny way to describe a person who just moments earlier we described as being so punctilious that he's going to be mafrid chumas amaisos right away. So admittedly, these two answers really seem to be describing two different personas. Okay, and I'll leave that alone. Meaning, there are ways to try to address that, but let's just leave it as it is. Right now, as we're on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, so the basic topic of today's Gemara is whether or not a suffik can be motzi midei vadai. And so far, what we've seen is not necessarily. Or the Gemara still wants to present it ein suffik motzi midei vadai. If I start with a fact, and I only have now a question, the question cannot uproot a fact. So for example, like our Mishnah, when I see a weasel bringing chametz from one home into another home, so that is now a vadai, and now maybe the cholde ate it. Okay, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Ein safik motzi midei vadai. That's where we stand right now in the Gemara. Challenged it based on a Mishnah and Olos. Challenged it based on a Braisa regarding a chaver. We're continuing in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of the Amud. Ein safik motzi midei vadai v'hatanya. The Gemara says, why don't we consider the following braisa? Am Rav Yehuda ma'isa b'shivchaso shal matzik echad b'rimon she'etil ha'nefel abor top of the Amud beiz uva'kon v'yitzitz ba leidayim zachar im nekevayi uva ma'isa lefnei chachamim v'tiaru m'meshechuldo vardos mitzuyim sham. The Mishnah over here that we're describing is the following. It's not a Mishnah Nolos, it's a Tosefta, but it's describing the following scenario. There was an episode with a shivchaso shel matzik echad. So the maidservant of a matzik, Rashi describes over here as somebody who is a really strong individual, right? A bully, if you will. And what she did is that she miscarried. And her miscarriage was deposited into a pit. And now, next chapter in the story, is that you had a kohen who looked over the side of the pit in order to see what came out of her. Was it a zachar or was it a nekeva? And the reason why he needed that determination is because even though unfortunately it was a miscarriage, but we have to know whether the mother is tumas leida after having given birth to a zachar or tumas leida after having given birth to a nekeva. As we discussed time and again throughout Shas, it makes a difference in terms of the duration of her tumah. Be that as it may, so the kohen now put his head over the pit, now putting himself directly over the mace, and now he didn't see anything. And he went over to the chachamim with a question of, look, I put my head over the pit, I know there was human remains, that was dropped into the bottom of the pit, but quite frankly, I didn't see anything. And he asked the chachamim as to whether or not he is tameh. And the chachamim said to him, he's not tameh because chulda ubardos mitzuyim sham, because there are plenty of weasels in that pit. And so the presumption is that one of the weasels took the remains and brought it to some other location. And so therefore the kohen is not tameh. Okay, a couple of points over here before we deal with the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question is going to be obvious. meaning we start off with the fact that the human remains were deposited in the pit, and now based on a suffix of maybe the weasel is going to go ahead and drag the remains elsewhere, so we're saying that the kohen is tahor. But meanwhile, over here, this is a suffix which is being motzi midei vaday. Okay, so the question on the table is pretty straightforward. A couple points over here. Our kohen who looked over the side of the pit. What is he doing? Meaning he's a kohen. He shouldn't be doing that. Rashi on the top of the Amud writes, Ubal kohen v'itzitz. I'm sorry, next Rashi. Leidaim zachem nekeva v'kohen karov. So, o mi bnei habayis haya v'shalchu sham lahagid li'imo mativo. V'tavchin bein tumas v'tahar zachli meituma v'tahar nekeva. So the... So as far as the Kohen is concerned, so Rashi over here makes a suggestion that he's a Kohen Karov, that he's a relative. Okay, now that's a difficult assertion on the part of Rashi because he's a relative and therefore what? Well, first of all, she's a Shifcha, so how can the Kohen necessarily be related? Right, that's very difficult. If you take a look at the Tosfos on the bottom of Tesamon Aleph. So Tosfos over here writes on Marie, last four lines of the Tosfos, de kohen shotehaya. Right? The easiest way to explain it, although it doesn't put our kohen in the best light, and that is that the kohen was just not knowledgeable. Right? He was a foolish kohen. Da filo im nomar shel gevirta haya, the kohen ze karav haya la, I'm sorry, karav haya, because Tosfos says, because consider, let's say that he was he was the master of the Shivcha, and he was the Adon. And you want to talk about maybe possible relationships over here. Lohaya lo litame. So there's no reason for this Kohen to go ahead and to be metame in this circumstance. Damir and Batoris Kohanim ain't Kohen metame lenefalim. De dumi davi v'imo b'inan, b'nei kayama. So first of all, Tosha says that yes, a Kohen is allowed to be metame for a Karov, but not for a Nefel. Meaning the halachas that allow a kohen to be metame is only when the remains is the remains of somebody that went through a full viability, okay? And for a nefel, so it's unfortunate, but there's no allowance for the kohen to be metame for the nefel. That's point number one. Tosfos says, and I'll tell you something else. This next point of Tosfos over here is much discussed. And that is, Tosfos says over here, a kohen being metame for a karov. Let's even for a moment entertain that the kohen over here and the nefel were related. So a kohen can only be metame, can only go to the cemetery and be involved in the burial of the karov only when he's actually being involved in the burial. Over here, the kohen's peering his head over the side to see whether or not it's a male or a female stillborn over here. So this is not sorech hames. This is not Sorach HaKvura, and so therefore Tosfos says that under those circumstances, the Kohen cannot be Metame. So, as you can imagine, a lot of discussion, meaning what Tosfos is essentially saying over here is that the only allowance for a Kohen to go to a cemetery for the burial of a Karov is only when he's actually involved in the burial itself. Okay, much to discuss about that point of Tosfos. Anyway, the easiest way to describe our Kohen over here who peeked over the side is that he's a Kohen Shota. Okay, not knowledgeable Kohen. Okay, so let's now go back to our Gemara, and now the Gemara is going to be addressing the very question which we are been dealing with all morning, and that is Vahacha Devada Itila V'Safik Garu V'Safik Lo Garu. So the Gemara says, look, we know for sure. We start off with the fact that the woman miscarried into this pit, and now the Kohen put his head over the top, and now is the Kohen Tame? The Chachamim said he's not Tame. I don't understand. We're starting with a Vadai. And now, the only thing that we're being matir, the only reason we're being matir the Kohen, is because possibly the remains were being dragged by a weasel? We don't know. So the Gemara says, Ha'ishaita v'kasi tzafik mosimi devadai. Okay, and so I should have read that. That's the Gemara concluding its question. So how are we having a tzafik being mosimi devadai? Gemara also tries to suggest an answer. Lo tema shi tila nefel labor. Ela'ema shi'ipila kemin nefel labor. V'havi suffik v'suffik. So what the Gemara suggests over here is that, look, we don't necessarily start off with a fact. Meaning we're saying that there's for sure tumah that start off in the pit. We don't know. We know that Rachmanus, the woman, so she miscarried. But we don't even know if that miscarriage is even amount to something which would create tuma. The Gemara Nida discusses this in some detail. The Mishnayos and Olos also describe this in some detail in terms of what exactly has to come out of her in order to qualify as human remains that are a source of tuma. So what we're suggesting over here is we don't even know if we've gone that far. Now the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. V'haleidaim zachar hu im nekeva hi ketani. So yeah, but read the Braisa. The Braisa says that the reason why the Kohen peered over the side of the pid is to see whether it's a male or female. It certainly seems like a simple reading of the Braisa would indicate that we are starting, in fact, with the premise that it was human remains, and it was just a question of whether it was male or female. So the Gemara says, Hachi kamar le demruch hipila, im nefal hipila. So the Gemara says, no. The first thing the Kohen was looking over the side to see is whether or not maybe what she miscarried was ruach. It was some discharge, but it wasn't actual human remains. Or maybe it was human remains. So meaning the first question is whether or not the discharge itself represented human remains. V'im tam salam or nefal hipila le dem zachahi v'im nekevahi. And then if it was human remains, whether or not it was male or female. What the Gemara is now saying is that this is not a case of Suffolk versus Vadai. This is a case of Suffolk versus Suffolk because we don't know if what was deposited in that pit to begin with was even considered Tumas Mace. That's one approach. The Gemara says, and I'll give you a second approach as well. So the Gemara says, look, and what we could also say is the following. That case is Vadai versus Vadai. Meaning, as far as our discussion, maybe the Chulda did not eat the Chametz, right? That's where we started our whole discussion. Fine, that's a Suffolk. And I'll entertain that as a Suffolk. But over here, what are we talking about? Vadai. Definitively, a weasel is going to drag the remains elsewhere. That's not open for a discussion. That's for sure. That's a vadai. That's absolute. Meaning there are weasels in the pit. The weasels are going to go ahead and drag it. So when the Kohen puts his head over, so it is a vadai versus a vadai. Yes, it's true. We start off with the fact that that remains were deposited in that pit. But we also are going to continue with another fact, which is that weasels for sure drag. Whether they eat or don't eat, subject to a debate, or suffix. But the fact that they drag, that's a vadai. That's the Gemara's other approach. Umi Amrina, the parentheses, which I'm skipping right now, is just really is saying that same answer in somewhat different language. Umi Amrina, ein choshen shema gira cholda hakatani seifa. So the Gemara says, are you sure you're right about this? It says in the seifa, Uma shemeshari yinichenu bitzina, And that which you leave over, so yinichena b'tzina, put it in a private area, so that there will be no b'dika that's necessary afterwards. Okay, what this Bryce is describing is the following, and we're going to be, and it's a Mishnah, and we're going to be seeing this Mishnah in tomorrow's Daf, Emir Tzah Hashem. I'm not sure if we're going to get there, but anyway, but we'll see this, it comes up in tomorrow's Daf. And that's the following. You do your b'dika on Lel Yadalit. Great. Now, you want to eat breakfast tomorrow morning, and, you know, in other words, you'll have a chance to eat chametz, so you'll leave over some chametz tomorrow. So what the Mishnah describes is, well, how do you leave over for tomorrow? How do you leave chametz over for tomorrow? It's actually very simple. Whatever chametz you don't destroy, whatever chametz you would like to leave over for the following morning, so yinichena b'tzena, put in a private area, shelo yetze itzarech b'dika acharav, so that no b'dika is going to be required afterwards. Okay. Now, what we're saying over here clearly is the following. Is that if I don't put it in a private area, so then the concern is going to be, is that it's going to get dragged around. So what we see over here is that even from the upcoming Mishnah, we have a Vadai. We know that there's Chametz over here, and without it being put into a private area, we're concerned now that the weasels are going to be dragging around from one place to another. So Amar Abaye Lokasha, Harba arba sar haba shlosha asar. So Abai is going to give an answer. It's going to be really difficult to understand, but let's at least go through it at a cursory glance. Well, maybe there's a difference between the 13th day and the 14th day of Nisan. Because consider, on the 13th, there's plenty of chametz around, right? In other words, we are not looking at the end of the chametz. Plenty around. And so what the weasel is going to do is that the weasel is going to carry the chametz around, but he's going to eat it all, he's going to consume it all. However, barbasar de lo shchicha rifta bekulo bate mitzna'a. But on the 14th day, meaning remember, we're describing now the morning of the 14th, there's not a lot of chametz around, and so the weasel now is going to think to himself, and I know that's a funny sentence, and we're going to come back to that in just a moment. Well, the weasel is going to think to himself, well, there's really now a scarcity of chametz as we're approaching Pesach, and so therefore what I'm going to do is the following. I'm going to move the chametz from one location to another, but you know what? I'm not going to eat it all because I got to leave some over for later. Otherwise, I'm not going to have any chametz left. Okay, now, what I just did is somewhat ridiculous, and that is I gave thought and animation to the rat. And we're talking halacha over here. And Ama Rava v'chichulda nevi'ehi, and perhaps one of the funniest lines in all Shas. And the Gemara says, and I don't understand. Our weasel over here, what, some sort of nevi'ah, right, some sort of prophet? And obviously the play on words over here, right? Chulda herself was a nevi'ah, one of the seven nevi'os mentioned in the beginning of Masechta Megillah. Anyway, but over here, right, with the double entendre, the weasel that we're discussing right over here. V'chi chulda nevi'ah, I don't understand. Our chulda really is knowledgeable in terms of the dates of the calendar. D'yada da'idna arveyasar v'lo ape ad la'orsa misharim etamra, that our weasel over here knows, right? The weasel's got like a little calendar hanging on their wall, knowing that today's the 14th, knowing that there's not going to be any chametz coming up in the upcoming days. In other words, it's just simply an absurdity. It is cartoonish. So the Gemara says, Ela Amarava, Masha Mashayi Nechena B'tzina, Shemetito Cholda B'fanenu, V'yitzarech B'dika Acharav. So Rava says, no. You misunderstood the Mishnah coming up on tomorrow's daf. What the Mishnah is saying is the following. Is that Masha Mishayir, look, you did your bedika on Lal Yadalit. You want to leave over cereal for tomorrow morning. Great. Leave over cereal for tomorrow morning. And Yenechena Betzina. And what the Mishnah is doing is it's providing good advice. Don't leave it around. Put it in a safe spot. Because what may end up happening is Shema Tito Choda Bifanenu. Because we may see the weasel go ahead and take the Chametz Ve'itzarach Bedika Acharav. And now we're going to need another bedika. The Mishnah is not saying that we have to be worried and preoccupied that maybe a weasel is going to come and take it. What the Mishnah is saying is that, look, I'm helping you out over here. I'm advising. Because if I see the weasel go ahead now and take the chametz and scurry off with it, so that's it now. We now know that there's chametz somewhere around the house and we're going to have to do bedika again. That's the way to understand the Mishnah, but the Mishnah does not mean that you actually need to be concerned about this. Tanya Kavaseh de Rava, the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that is totally supportive of this idea of Rava. And that is, HaRotza Lechol Chametz Acher Bedika Ketzad Yaseh, if you want to eat Chametz after the Bedika, what do you do? So Masha Mesha Yenechena B'tzena. So whatever you leave over, put it in a private area, keep it secure. Shelo Tavo Cholda B'Tito B'Fanenu. Here the brisa says it exactly as Rava said it. Because we're worried that a weasel is going to go ahead and take it right in front of us. And we're going to need another bedika. That's the way to understand the Mishnah on Daf Yud. And so therefore, this idea that we're concerned that a weasel is going to go ahead and take it, it's not a concern. If we see the weasel go ahead and take it, obviously that presents a concern. Rav Mari Amar Gzera Shami Ani Chesar V'Yimatzei Teisha. And Rav Mari says, look, I'll tell you another way to understand the Mishnah. And that is that really, and me'ikar adin, there's no need to be concerned. The reason why the Mishnah says that you have to put it in a secure area is because what you may end up doing is that you may put down 10 and you may end up finding only 9. And obviously now you know that we didn't find all of our chametz. Now, Ramari's answer over here is not speaking to our minhag, which I'm going to get back to in just a moment, about leaving out 10 pieces before you do the bedika. Ramari's just simply saying that in terms of understanding the Mishnah upcoming, where the Mishnah says that if I want to leave chametz over for the morning of the 14th, what I'm going to do is put in a secure area. The reason why the Chachamim did that is because, yeah, under normal circumstances, we're not worried that a rodent is going to come in and take away the chametz and scurry away with the chametz. It just happens to be that the Chachamim were concerned that what you're going to do is that you're going to store 10 cereal boxes. I'm just using that as an example, just to give a number. I may store 10 cereal boxes, and the next morning what I may end up happening is I'll open up the cabinet and I'll find only 9 over there. Well, where's that 10th? You put that away? And so therefore the Chachamim were concerned of this scenario. So therefore they said that in general, when putting chametz away for the morning, for the next morning, what you should do is you should put it in a secure area so you never get to this point. Okay. We'll stop over here because the topics coming up, still topics of Safek and Vaday, right? Shas topics, but we'll start fresh tomorrow morning at the two dots. In the meantime, however, we know Minhag Yisrael, it's already brought down by the Ramah, is that before we do the Bedika, we actually lay out pieces of Chametz, and so therefore when we do the Bedika, we're going to find Chametz, because we laid it out in advance. Minhag Yisrael is to lay out 10 pieces. Okay, our Gemara over here, which is not speaking to this minhag, this is a gzeira, the Chachamim are describing over here, right? In order to explain the Mishnah on Yud Amud Beis. But this Gemara could certainly be supportive of the minhag that has been our minhag now for centuries in terms of laying out chametz before we do the bedika, right? Some suggest is that so that at least the bracha that we make will not be a bracha of atala. Although that's a much discussed issue, meaning that the bracha is not only going on the bedika, it's going on the beer as well. And even if I don't end up finding chametz, but mission accomplished in that, we've done the beer. Okay. Let's stop over here. Let's quickly recap our daf today. We started with the Mishnah on the top of Tesamen Aleph. Our Mishnah says, here's what you don't have to worry about once the house is checked. You don't have to worry that maybe a rodent went ahead and took chametz from an unchecked home and brought it into my home, which is a checked home. You don't have to worry about that. If you do worry about that, ain't l'davar sof. Okay, and again, by the way, as I made mention in the beginning of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah is saying this is something you don't have to worry about, it means that when it comes to chametz on Pesach, right, we're on high alert, and so therefore we could at least have entertained the idea that this is something we have to worry about, but the Mishnah says, but don't worry about that. However, the Mishnah is saying is that if I actually saw a weasel take chametz from a home which is not checked into a home which is checked, so that checked home now becomes unchecked, and we have to go ahead and we have to examine it. And the discussion that revolves around the entirety of today's daf is, look, we start with a vadai. We know chametz was introduced into the home. Now, isn't it possible, at least we can argue, that maybe the Ronin went ahead and ate the chametz? And don't we say now that suffik mosi midei vadai, or can't we at least entertain that possibility? So that's the discussion around today's daf, whether or not suffik mosi midei vadai. The cases that we discussed, I'm just going to mention the cases. To go through every case would basically be to go through the entire Gemara today. But the cases that we described is the Mishnah Olos in the 18th Perek regarding the occupancy of a home by a non-Jew, where they have the practice of taking any stillborns and burying it in the earth, in the ground within the home. And so therefore, if a Jew wants to move into a home, he has to check it. So over there, isn't that an issue of Suffolk Mitzvah de Vadai? The Gemara discussed that case. Gemara discussed another case where I have a Chaver who harvested today, left the basket in his home, and then, Rachmanis, he died that day. Can we say that he was misakin, that he took off Trumas and Maisus from the basket right away? That also is another discussion of Safek Mitzvah Midei Vadai. We discussed the case on the bottom of Tesamen Aleph, where the Kohen peers his head over the pit, where a woman, a maidservant, went ahead and had a miscarriage, and he wanted to see whether or not she is subject to Trumas Leidam. And so the Kohen put his head over the pit. Tosfos describes the Kohen as a Kohen Shota. And isn't this also going to be a case of Suffolk versus Vadai? We start off with the fact that the remains were deposited in the pit. And meanwhile, the Kohen was described as not being Tameh. So isn't the Suffolk being Motzimi de Vadai? And that takes us well into the Amud Beis, on Tes Amud Beis. And finally, the Gemara wants to know, how do you understand the Mishnah, the upcoming Mishnah? Where the upcoming Mishnah says that if you want to leave over chametz for the next morning, what you're going to do is that you're going to put it in a private area. Because if I don't put it in a private area, I have to be concerned that a weasel is going to go ahead and drag it. So don't we say that we're not concerned about that? So the Gemara gives a couple of explanations. The Abaye's explanation, which the Gemara thought to be comical, which is that the weasel knows the difference between the 13th day of Nisan and the 14th day of Nisan, and he knows that there's a scarcity of chametz coming up. The Gemara says, no, our weasel is not prophetic. But rather, the explanation is that, no, if we just simply left the chametz out there, we're not worried. But if we actually saw the chul to go ahead and take it, under those circumstances, we need to be worried. That's one way to understand the Mishnah on tomorrow's daf. There's another way to understand it as well. That it's a gzeira, adkan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. For tomorrow, we pick it up at the two dots.